President Raisi says that Iran will protect the rights of its people to the very end, as high-stakes diplomacy continues to revive the 2015 nuclear deal. Somali officials raised the death toll from a 30-hour siege by al-Shabaab terrorists on a hotel in the capital, Mogadishu, to 21, with scores more wounded. Also in this newscast, a Russian journalist and daughter of a well-known political philosopher is killed in a car blast near Moscow. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it will not give up the rights of the nation in any talks or meetings amid a flurry of diplomatic exchanges to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. The Iranian president says that his administration will powerfully continue efforts to resolve the country's problems and to push for its progress. Ebrahim Raisi vowed not to tie people's livelihoods to any foreign factor. He said that Iran has secured a considerable part of its demands from some other countries. Comments come amid intense speculation about the fate of the JCPOA after Iran provided its written response to the most recent EU proposal to salvage the pact. Tehran says Washington must now show flexibility and take a realistic approach if it really wants a final agreement. Delegation from Iran, headed by the country's Minister for Roads and Urban Development, Rostam Qasemi, has visited Pakistan. During the visit, the two countries agreed to finalize the free trade agreements within the next 6 months. Nasser Kazmi has more in this report from Islamabad.
Iranian Minister for Roads and Urban Development Rustam Qasemi, along with the delegation of 57 dignitaries from Iran, visited Islamabad on the sidelines of 21st session of Pak-Iran Joint Economic Commission. During the two-day visit, the Iranian delegation met Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and discussed the bilateral ties between the two countries. Pakistan's Foreign Minister underlined the need to fully utilize the existing potential between Islamabad and Tehran in energy and air links. Addressing a press conference with the Iranian Roads and Urban Development Minister, Pakistan's Minister for Commerce Naveed Qamar said, both sides have agreed to start negotiations on transit agreements that will allow the movement of goods without any additional taxes or tariffs.
We agreed on time frames for the PTA, which is to be negotiated between the two countries, and an ambitious target of 6 months has been set for that process.
The visiting Iranian minister, Rustam Qasemi, said the 21st session of Pakistan-Iran Joint Economic Commission offers new avenues for expanding bilateral ties between Pakistan and Iran. He noted, in order to increase bilateral trade, both sides are ready to establish border markets, which will later be made free economic zones to enable investors of both countries to set up their industries for import and export purposes.
I believe that the implementation of these agreements will play a significant role in raising the quality of life of the people of the two sides, especially the border markets, transportation, and the exchange of goods between the two countries.
Islamabad has assured Tehran that it is committed to taking all possible measures to increase bilateral trade volume to the level of $5 billion in near future.
Besides signing different MOUs in the fields of transport, trade and business, both Pakistan and Iran also stressed the need of making visa conditions easier to facilitate the traders and visitors from both sides. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
The Palestinian president slams Israel's forced closure of seven Palestinian non-governmental organizations in the occupied West Bank. Mahmoud Abbas said the regime's unilateral actions are unacceptable and they are in violation of international law. When he hailed the international consensus condemning the closures, Abbas noted practical international measures are needed to stop Israel's aggressive policies. The Palestinian president added that the NGOs will continue to expose the Israeli crimes, irrespective of the shutdown order. On Friday, nine European countries, including France and Germany, said that they were deeply concerned by the Israeli move. The UN has also urged the regime to allow the NGOs to continue working.
The Israeli military shut down seven Palestinian non-governmental civil society and human rights organizations in the occupied West Bank, Early on Thursday, the Israeli military raided occupied Ramallah and broke into the offices of the organizations. The offices were ransacked and their equipment confiscated. Doors were welded shut with an Israeli military order posted on them declaring the organizations unlawful. The groups have decried the move as politically motivated and baseless.
They are targeting by the seven organizations. They are targeting the civil society sector in Palestine and the human rights sector in general. So the message was any organization talked about, exposed the Israeli policy, talked about the Israeli crimes will be targeted and will be silent. Again, the message also for the international organizations and, of course, also for the EU states, those who are rejected the Israeli allegation against the organizations. This is a message that Israel is above the law.
Israel has outlawed six of these NGOs, which were labeled as terrorist organizations in October 2021, and accused them of funneling donor aid to militants and had ties to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Palestinian left-wing movement. The organizations that have been outlawed by Israel are Ad-Damir and Al-Haq, which document human rights violations, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, Bissan Center for Research, DCI, Defense for Children International Palestine, as well as the Union of Agricultural Work Committees. The seventh organization was the Union of Health Work Committees.
We will continue our work. Work in this field, it's not a job. It's not a job. The Israelis continue their atrocities, their oppression against us, against the rest of the civil society organizations here. But this will not stop us, and this will not push us back, and we will not give up, and we will continue. We know that we pay price, maybe personal price, maybe different kind of a price, but we are ready to defend, to fight for the principles that we do believe.
The United Nations Human Rights Office has meanwhile expressed alarm at Israel's arbitrary closure of organizations and called on Israel to immediately reverse these decisions, reiterating the High Commissioner's call to revoke the designations of the organizations as terrorist and unlawful. The Israeli regime has added to its illegal practices which aim to silence the Palestinian people. Today, not only does it continue to suppress Palestinian people, the regime also quells these organizations and human rights advocates. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The Somali military has ended the al-Shabaab terrorist siege on a hotel in the capital, Mogadishu. The 30-hour crisis came to an end after forces pounded the Hyatt Hotel with heavy weapons late Saturday to eliminate the gunmen. Al-Shabaab launched a gun and bomb attack on the building on Friday, killed at least 21 people and injured dozens more. Security sources say the building is yet to be cleared of possible explosives. The attack is the biggest in Mogadishu since Somalia's new government took office in June. Al-Shabaab is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda and controls much of southern and central Somalia. It has engaged in a long-running conflict with the federal government. The flow of goods grinds to a halt at the UK's largest container port, where dock workers have begun their first strike in 30 years over a pay dispute. The walkout involves 1,900 staff members of Felixstowe Port. They are represented by Unite Union. It says the eight-day action is in response to the port operator's failure to give dock workers a raise proportionate to inflation. Unite says the industrial action will cause huge disruptions and will send shockwaves through the UK's supply chain. The strike is the latest in a string of similar moves by workers across different sectors. That's amid a cost of living crisis in Britain, where consumer price inflation has hit 10.1% in July. Amina Taylor joined us a short while ago from London with more details on the unfolding industrial chaos in the UK.
Well, what's going on is unionized workers letting the government know that, you know, them, their representatives, private companies like the one that's in charge of the operations at Felixstowe here, cannot continue to make huge profits off the backs of their workers. And then when these people and their representation obviously point out that the offers you're giving us do not match inflation and would effectively be a wage cut, you have no choice but to take back your working rights, your ability for them to use your labor. And for Ground Shapps, who's the transport minister here, who's been doing his level best to try and demonize what the unions are doing, calling them fat cats, saying these people have very good salaries and therefore, you know, shouldn't really complain about the offers that are being made.
Britain's biggest opposition Labour Party has seen its membership numbers slump over the past year, raising questions over the party's current leadership. Since taking over from former pro-Palestine leader Jeremy Corbyn, Sir Keir Starmer has been condemned by members as leading the party into a purge of pro-Corbyn elements, including minority members. Rob Carter has more.
The UK's biggest opposition party has entered into a membership crisis as close to 100,000 members abandoned the party over the past 12 months. On Tuesday, the Electoral Commission revealed that the UK Labour Party's membership fell by more than 91,000 in 2021, with a loss of income from membership fees contributing towards the party's end-of-year financial deficit of £5 million.
The question is, why is there a mass exodus of the Labour Party happening now, especially given the fact that over the past 12 months, it's been the ruling Conservative Party who have been embroiled in the majority of the headline-grabbing scandals? Many former Labour members have informed us that it appears to be the direction in which the current leader, Sir Keir Starmer, is taking the party in, which is proving to be a decisive factor for many.
Speaking to a former Labour member, shocking accusations of racism, Islamophobia and a purge of left-wing socialists has left a bitter taste with former Labour loyalists.
It's a witch hunt. There's actually been a witch hunt, and I firmly believe that currently in the Labour Party, they are actively on a witch hunt to wean out anyone who is not in line with their party. The leadership is taking the party down a route of racism, down a route of pure and utter Islamophobia. They're not only losing the minority vote, but they're losing many other people as well.
Labour's membership increased significantly during former party leader Jeremy Corbyn's term, swelling to more than 500,000. The lifelong socialist eventually handed over power following years of stiff rebellions from right-wing Labour MPs, who now head the party. The latest figures raise serious doubts of whether current leader Sir Keir Starmer could win an election when he can't even win the hearts of Labour's own membership. Robert Carter, London.
On to Ukraine, where the war is now approaching its seventh month. Moscow says it has destroyed an ammunition depot in Odessa region. The Defense Ministry says the depot contained missiles for U.S.-made HIMARS rocket and other Western-made anti-aircraft systems. According to the ministry, sea-based caliber missiles were used in the attack. Ukrainian authorities say five missiles were fired from the Black Sea overnight, adding that air defenses shut down two of them, while the other three hit an agricultural facility. Moscow also says two M777 howitzers were destroyed in the southern region of Kherson, and a fuel depot was struck in the Zaporizhia region. Meanwhile, Ukrainian authorities say the city of Nikopol near the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was shelled overnight. The daughter of a controversial Russian political commentator has been killed in a suspected car bomb attack outside of Moscow. Investigators say that Darya Dugina, the daughter of Alexander Dugin, was killed when a suspected explosive device detonated on the vehicle that she was traveling in. TV footage accompanying the statement showed investigators collecting debris and fragments from the spot where the explosion happened. Investigators, who described Darya Dugin as a journalist and political expert, said that they had opened a murder case and would be carrying out forensic examinations to try to determine exactly what had happened. Her father is a veteran, a Russian philosopher known for his staunch anti-Western views. Alexander Dugin is described in the West as one of Kremlin's ideological masterminds, but is considered a marginal figure in Russia. Our correspondent Marina Kortanova tells us more about the circumstances surrounding the suspected bomb attack killing Darya Dugina.
At 6 o'clock yesterday evening, Alexander Dugin gave a lecture, Traditions and History, at the Tradition Festival in the village of Zakharova. This is Moscow region, not far away from Kubinka and from other places. His daughter was also there as a guest. At 9:30 in the evening, Daria left the festival on the car Land Cruiser Prada. The explosive device was planted in the car that belonged to Alexander Dugin, who at the last moment decided to get into another car and followed Daria. The car left for Majaiskaya Highway, and the explosion occurred near the village of Большие Вязёмы. The bomb went off while the vehicle was moving. After the explosion, the car crashed into a fence, and Daria Dugina, who was driving the car, died immediately. Directly behind the Dasha was his father, who saw all this happen before his eyes. He's in the hospital at the moment. And the death of Daria Dugina is sacred. They beat Dugin. They wanted to kill him physically or kill him through the death of his beloved daughter. And the idea that the word and idea continue to be an important and dangerous subject of life.
Russia and the U.S. waging a war of words over chemical weapons. Moscow has dismissed Washington's allegations that it possesses such arms, saying the U.S. is in fact the only country not to have eliminated its arsenal. In a statement, the Russian embassy in Washington said Moscow completely destroyed its stocks of chemical warfare agents in 2017. It said this has been officially confirmed by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The mission called on the U.S. to stop evading its international obligations to eliminate chemical weapons. The statement was issued in response to claims made by the U.S. on the second anniversary of Russia's alleged chemical poisoning of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. The Russian embassy also called on the U.S. not to interfere in Russia's domestic affairs. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
journalism. Listeners, especially.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and warm greetings to you all, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, August 21st, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So, contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card or an eQSL card from us. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, and Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain. And we've received, as usual, many emails and letters from around the world, which I mention some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. So for this edition of Listeners Special, we will read an email from Juanrique Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, one of our old and regular listeners, David Mabi from Finland, Thomas Kutas from Poland, and the last but not the least, an email from Hector Fria Jofre from Chile, who is one of our old and regular listeners. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. As I said, Juanrique Avila Fernandez has sent us an email from Costa Rica, so let's see what he says. Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I send you a cordial and warm greeting. My name is Juanrique Avila Fernandez, and I am from Costa Rica. I would like to start this email by sending you the following. My father is very fond of Iranian culture. He spends his free time drawing portraits by hand. He has several friends in the Islamic Republic of Iran. For my part, I know a lot about the Persian culture. I listen to the broadcast in the English language when the weather conditions allow me. Especially, I like the program The Call of Islam because I find a lot of wisdom in it. I love the Persian culture, art, and literature of Iran. You're really people with a wonderful and charming culture. May God continue to bless you. I say goodbye, wishing all those who work in the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting good health and peace. I await a prompt response and a QSL. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Juan Rick Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica. I think it's the first time that we've received an email from you. So I suppose you have to be a new listener. I really enjoyed your message. It's great. It's great that you and your father are interested in the Iranian culture. So I have a suggestion. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio all the time and enjoy a variety of programs about the Iranian culture. Juan Rick Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, wish you all the best. Write to us soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. Thank you again. And from India, we've received an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharji, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Siddhartha says. Here, I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, sticker, stamps, and other promotional material, which is available in order to represent your radio here in India. Salam and warm greetings to you, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Yes, we've received the audio file you sent. Thank you for that. And as for your request about sending you the promotional items of IRIB English Radio, unfortunately, we can't, because sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio at the time of pandemic is not possible, but we have an option. Sending our great listeners an electronic QSL card. Thank you again, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India. Wish you luck. Write to us soon. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails from our listeners from around the world. Welcome back. David Mabi from Finland has sent us an email. Let's see what David says. Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I have been a regular listener to your broadcast on shortwave for about 3 months now and saw it was high time I sent you a reception report plus a few comments about your programs. Listening to you has opened the door into another culture, and this has naturally been an enlightening experience. In particular, I have listened to your news broadcast with attention plus various features such as In the Limelight. By the way, I am 71-year-old who recently returned to listening on shortwave. Originally, I was a DX listener in my youth. My home is located on the southwest coast of Finland. I hope my reception report is of use to you. Please, could you verify my report with your EQSL? In the meantime, best wishes and hope to hear from you soon. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. Please accept our warm appreciations and gratitudes to you for sending us this kind message. David Mabi from Finland. So, it's for 3 months that you've been listening to IRIB English Radio. I suppose you have to be a new listener. It's a pleasure to have you with us. So you like the new section as well as our analytic program In the Limelight. They're my favorite too, David Mabi. Thank you. Wish you luck. Write to us soon. And your reception report is very, very helpful to us. Yes, send reception reports, because by these reception reports, we will know about the quality of our programs. Thank you, David Mabi from Finland. We are looking forward to hearing from you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And from Poland, we've received an email from Thomas Kotas. Let's see what Thomas says. Dear staff, I am contacting you with a reception report of your broadcast. Thank you for taking the time to read my report. I hope you found it useful. If this reception report is accurate and you have the time, please verify it with an EQSL or email confirmation. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings to you, Thomas Kotos from Poland. And thank you for this message, Thomas. It's really kind of you. Wish you all the best. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon and knowing your views about our broadcast. Thomas Kotos from Poland, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Hector Friehofer from Chile. Yes, this is Listeners Special, and one of our old and regular listeners, Hector Friehofer from Chile, has sent us a message. Let's see what Hector says. Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting IRIB English Radio, I send my greetings and also a report in audio enclosed to my email confirming that I have been a listener of your radio. I would like to receive information about your country, and I certainly want to obtain a QSL card or an EQSL if it would be possible. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, Hector Friehofer from Chile, and please accept our warm gratitude to you for sending us this message. Yes, we've received your audio files. Thank you for that. And my colleague will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Thank you for this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about the broadcast of IRIB English Radio. So time tells me that we have to wrap up this edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us. But before I say goodbye to you, I send my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails, letters, and reception reports from around the world, including Hector Friehofer from Chile, Juan Antonio Bertolin from Spain, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Reginaldo Naldi from Brazil, Juan Rick Avila Fernandez from Costa Rica, Siddhartha Bhattacharya from India, David Moby from Finland, and Thomas Kotos from Poland. Thank you for being with us, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former President Donald J. Trump attempted to make the January 6, 2021 march on the Capitol appear spontaneous, even as he and his team intentionally assembled and galvanized a violence-prone mob to disrupt certification of his electoral defeat. The House committee investigating the attack showed on Tuesday, 12th of July. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Luke Broadwater and Alan Feuer. The piece is titled, Trump Sought to Conceal Plans to March to Capitol, panel says. Former President Donald J. Trump attempted to make the January 6, 2021 march on the Capitol appear spontaneous, even as he and his team intentionally assembled and galvanized a violence-prone mob to disrupt certification of his electoral defeat. The House committee investigating the attack showed on Tuesday, 12th of July. The President of the United States is going to have us march there in the Capitol, Kylie Jane Kremer, an organizer of the Save America rally on 6th of January 2021, wrote in a 4th of January text, shown by the panel on Tuesday, as it detailed Donald Trump's efforts to gather his backers in Washington for a final last-ditch effort to overturn his election loss. Ms. Kremer added that Donald Trump was going to just call for it unexpectedly. Mr. Trump weighed announcing the move, according to documents obtained from the National Archives, which provided the investigators with a draft tweet that said, I will be making a big speech at 10 a.m. on 6th of January 2021 at the Ellipse, south of the White House. Please arrive early. Massive crowds expected. March to the Capitol afterwards. Stop the steal. The tweet was never sent, but it was the latest evidence presented by the committee of how Donald Trump undertook a public and private effort to channel angry supporters, including right-wing extremists, towards the Capitol building, where Vice President Mike Pence and lawmakers were gathered to confirm Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s victory as president-elect. For more than a year, Donald Trump and his defenders have described the violence at the Capitol as a freewheeling, peaceful protest gone awry. But the hearing on Tuesday, 12th of July, laid out how the former president took a guiding role, not only in bringing the mob fueled by his election lies to Washington on that day, but also in the plan to direct it up to Capitol Hill, disregarding the advice of his closest aides. Donald Trump summoned the mob to Washington, D.C. and ultimately spurred that mob to wage a violent attack on our democracy, said Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi and the chairman of the House Committee. In its seventh hearing to lay out its findings, the committee situated Donald Trump at the center of the quasi-legal efforts to derail the political process and also at the heart of the unprecedented chaos at the Capitol. Over nearly 3 hours, it introduced evidence from rally organizers, from rioters and aides inside the White House, who said the former president had inspired and directed what transpired on that day. While it did not draw any direct link between Donald Trump and the domestic extremists who orchestrated and stood at the forefront of the Capitol attack, the House Committee set forth in meticulous detail how Donald Trump's words and actions united a disparate set of far-right groups and militias and spurred them to plot a violent effort to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power. The president got everybody riled up and told everybody to head on down, said one of the witnesses at the hearing, Stephen Ayers, an Ohio man who pleaded guilty last month to disorderly conduct charges connected to the Capitol attack. Stephen Ayers added, "We basically were just following what Donald Trump had said." Even Brad Pascal, Mr. Trump's one-time campaign manager, blamed his former boss for the deadly violence that ensued, according to evidence shown by the committee on Tuesday, 12th of July. "A sitting president asking for civil war. I have lost faith," he wrote in text messages on 6th of January 2021 to Katrina Pearson, Donald Trump's former spokeswoman, adding that Mr. Trump's rhetoric killed someone. Even as it revealed new evidence about Donald Trump's bid to cling on to power, the committee suggested that Mr. Trump was still trying to protect himself. Representative Liz Cheney, Republican of Wyoming, and the panel's vice chairwoman, repeated her concerns that Donald Trump had been quietly interfering with the committee's work by discouraging witnesses from cooperating with the inquiry. After the panel's last presentation, she said, "Donald Trump tried to call one of its witnesses, and the witness, through a lawyer, alerted the House Committee. We will take any effort to influence witness testimony very seriously," Liz Cheney said, adding that the panel had notified the Justice Department about the matter. In a statement on Twitter, Taylor Bodewich, a spokesman for Donald Trump, accused Representative Liz Cheney of spreading innuendos and lies, but did not address whether the former president had tried to contact a witness. In the hearing room on Tuesday, Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland, and a member of the House Select Committee, sought to draw a roadmap of Donald Trump's multi-layered effort to overturn his defeat, unfolding in three concentric rings. On the inside ring, Mr. Raskin said, was Donald Trump's pressure campaign against Mike Pence to persuade him to unilaterally throw out electoral votes for Joe Biden as he presided over a joint session of Congress to make the official count. In the middle ring, Jamie Raskin said, far-right extremist groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers unleashed by a December 19 tweet from Donald Trump that promised a wild rally in Washington on 6th of January, took the lead in invading and occupying the capital. And in the outer ring, he added, a large and angry crowd, encouraged by Donald Trump's lies about election fraud, became a political force that sought to keep the former president in power. The story the committee told on Tuesday, 12th of July, took place over three chaotic weeks at the end of 2020, starting on 14th of December, when the Electoral College met and declared Joe Biden the winner of the election. Within a day, leading Republicans like Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky acknowledged Joe Biden's victory, and several aides to Donald Trump, including Pat Cipollone, the top lawyer in the White House, advised the president to concede defeat. Instead, the committee documented how Donald Trump ignored top administration officials and turned his hopes and attention to a group of outside advisers who were recommending a dangerous and unprecedented plan to use the country's national security assets to seize control of voting machines and essentially to rerun the election. Through videotaped testimony, the panel brought to life a heated and often profane meeting in the Oval Office on 18th of December 2020, in which the advisers, among them the lawyer Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn, Donald Trump's former national security adviser, fought with Pat Cipollone and other White House advisers about the plan to seize the voting machines and to appoint a special counsel to investigate election fraud. Early the next morning, once the meeting ended, Donald Trump posted the message on Twitter, urging his supporters to come to Washington on 6th of January 2021, writing, "Be there, we'll be wild." The response to the message was immediate and electric. It was quickly amplified by prominent Trump supporters with influential followings like Alex Jones, the impresario of the conspiracy-laden media outlet InfoWars, and the right-wing podcaster Tim Pool. In the darkest corners of the internet, Donald Trump's supporters on websites such as thedonald.win soon began discussing bringing handcuffs, body armor, shields, bats, and pepper spray to Washington. Others talked about committing violence. "Why don't we just kill them all?" one person wrote on the chat board, 4chan. "Every last Democrat, down to the last man, last woman, and child." Donald Trump's tweet also had significant effects in the real world. Within days of it being posted, a pro-Trump organizing group called Women for America First changed its plans to hold a rally in Washington after Joe Biden's inauguration, moving the event up to 6th of January 2021. Around the same time, the committee showed the prominent Stop the Steal organizer Ali Alexander registered the website wildprotest.com, which provided information about numerous protests in Washington on 6th of January 2021, with event times, places, speakers, and details on transportation. Mr. Alexander sent a text to an associate on 5th of January 2021, saying that he believed Donald Trump was going to order him and his associates to march to the Capitol, the committee showed. On 21st of December 2020, 2 days after Donald Trump's tweet about 6th of January was posted, a group of far-right members of Congress met with the president at the White House to discuss the conservative lawyer John Eastman's theories about pressuring Mike Pence to disrupt the normal workings of the Electoral College and keep Donald Trump in power. The members of Congress at the meeting included Representatives Andy Biggs of Arizona, Matt Gaetz of Florida, Louie Gohmert of Texas, and Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, the committee said. The committee heard on Tuesday, 12th of July, from another witness, Jason Van Tattenhove, a former spokesman for the Oath Keepers militia, who described the group as a threat to democracy. The leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, is one of several members of the group who has been charged with seditious conspiracy in connection with the Capitol attack. And for the first time, the committee heard testimony from a criminal defendant who was at the Capitol on 6th of January 2021 and is now facing charges. The defendant, Mr. Iles, told the panel that he had gone to Washington at Donald Trump's direction and marched to the Capitol when the president told him to do so, and would never have gone in the first place had he known that Donald Trump's election fraud claims were false. Iles said that his participation in the riot had ruined his life and that he felt duped and betrayed by Donald Trump. I felt like I had, like, horse blinders on. I was locked in the whole time, Mr. Iles said. The biggest thing for me is take the blinders off. Make sure you step back and see what's going on before it's too late.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith This hadith is about the virtues of the dust of Karbala. As you know, we are in the month of Muharram. This is a very blessed and beautiful month, a very special sacred month, a month in which we can renew our allegiance to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and also enjoy the spiritual blessings of, you know, commemorating his martyrdom, remembering him, crying for him and his companions who were martyred alongside him on the day of Ashura in the plains of Karbala. You know, everything connected to Imam Hussein from his from the day he was killed to the place he was buried, you know, and even the dust of the land he was buried in, everything about him is special. And this distinction and this greatness and virtue is manifested in this very beautifully in this hadith, which we would like to recite for our listeners today. Imam Ali alayhi salam, addressing the dust of the land of Karbala, right? So this kind of indicates the fact that this dust kind of has a sort of, is kind of sentient, has a sort of consciousness. It's also a kind of distinction. Otherwise, why would the Imam address it, right? But aside from that, you know, the Imam says the following regarding this dust. He says, how beautiful is your smell? You know, so there's a special fragrance emitting from this dust, you know, something that only probably the Imam can understand. It kind of requires a special organ of sense, spiritual organ of sense that, you know, most people don't have. But this is something nevertheless true of it. And then the Imam says the following, on the day of resurrection, a group of people will be resurrected from you, meaning from this dust, and they will enter paradise. They will enter paradise, يَدْخُلُونَ الْجَنَّةِ بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ, without being taken into account of. This is a virtue of this land and a virtue for the people perhaps who are buried there. People who are buried there, they will enter paradise without being taken into account of course, with the other conditions which are necessary for it. You know, this is the actual act of being taken account of is a sort of, you know, dangerous and scary event, right? And, you know, the idea that somebody would be relieved of this act and will not be taken account of is actually a sort of relief for the person. It's a sort of reward for him. And, you know, one of the things that can lead to this reward is the actual act of being buried in this land of Karbala. It's possible also for, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to refer to people who are actually buried there. Maybe it refers to the fact that the spirits of the believers who are somehow connected to this land, you know, on the day of resurrection, they will somehow come from this land and will be rewarded by not being taken into account for their actions. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the blessings and virtues of the dust of Karbala in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
The Spotlight.